evening. Welcome to tonight's meeting of Bethlehem City Council for Tuesday, June 16th, 2020, 7 p.m. here in Town Hall. We'd all rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God,
liberty and justice for all.
Just as good as when we practiced it. Thank you. Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan.
Present.
Mr. Cologne.
Present.
Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Present.
Ms. Negron.
Present.
Mr. Reynolds.
Present.
Dr. Van Wert.
Present.
Mr. Waldron.
Present. Thank you all for joining us. We have no minutes for approval this evening, so we'll move on to public comment. We will continue our public comment remotely. I have a couple names signed up here. If you're monitoring at home, that'll be Mr. Zahm and Mr. Gallagher, and then I'll open it up to other folks who would like to call in. Phone line is currently on Do Not Disturb at this point. But before that, we'll be joined this evening by Bill Adello, who is the FOP president, who wanted to join us this evening, give some remarks, and answer any questions that council may have. So I'd like to step up and you might be more comfortable up there. That way you don't have to hold your notes, and you can hide a little bit better as well. Okay. Members of council, I've come here tonight to discuss several topics regarding our city, our police department, and the issues of racial injustice facing our country. As you know, the Fraternal Order of Police, Star Lodge No. 20, is the bargaining unit for the members of the City of Bethlehem Police Department. Our lodge is one of the oldest in the world, as we celebrated our 100-year anniversary in 2019. But in reality, our lodge is just five fathers with 10 children between us who are trying to balance home life, work, and all the other issues that life throws at us. I know my time is limited, so I will attempt to state my points quickly. At the June 3rd council meeting, Councilwoman Van Wert and Councilwoman Negron referenced an incident of racial profiling that involved a Hispanic male who made several allegations of misconduct, both physical and verbal, which he claimed were based on racial profiling by a white officer. Since that incident, it has been the subject of investigation by the police, city administration, and council. Has been written about on local blog websites, social media, and an article by Lehigh University's newspaper, which was ironically called The Brown and White. I'm here today to state publicly that the allegations concocted by this male were not only false, but a work of fiction. The Brown and White article, while very well written and articulate, was based upon a lie. An article about the world being flat would have been more accurate than the account of the interaction between that gentleman and our officers. The insinuation that the traffic stop was based on the male's race is absurd. The officer was parked monitoring an intersection from about 75 yards away with no streetlights. When the male very clearly drew through the stop sign, it would have made it impossible for anyone to determine the race of the driver. I understand those who rallied to this gentleman's story had their hearts in the right place, but they were duped. In fact, the most serious policy violation was when the officer offered to park the male's vehicle so it would not be towed. The officer did park the male's vehicle, though I don't believe anyone here would like to see him punished for it. The male who lives in West Bethlehem told the officers he was just going for a drive and for some reason decided to drive the back streets of the Yasco Park area, one of our highest crime areas, at midnight with burnt blunts underneath his seat. During the interaction, the officer was alerted to an immigration warrant for someone with a male's name and even the same scar on his wrist. During the entire interaction between the police and the male, the officers were professional, polite, and treated the male with the same dignity and respect that I would expect my family to be treated with. This allegation came as a surprise to many of us, as the involved officer is one of our finest. The officer actually just finished 3 months of field training with one of our newest hires, who is a proud Puerto Rican-born American. And I'm aware of what occurred during this training because I was the training sergeant responsible for the FTO program. When the involved officer was hired, he was also trained by a minority. I know for a fact he was trained to respect every one of our residents because I trained him. And you see, I'm the firstborn son of a man who came to this country illegally from Mexico. With a ninth grade education, a fake green card, no ability to speak the English language, my father moved to this country and found a job washing dishes at a restaurant that didn't ask too many questions. I grew up watching him struggle, working two or three jobs at a time. I remember the pride that he had when he became a citizen. I remember being 8 years old and spending 12 hours alone in a sleazy motel outside of El Paso, Texas, while my father took my sister across the border to get her immigration paperwork fixed. I know what it means to come from nothing, and I know to never underestimate the struggles of a stranger. And for these reasons, I find myself so angry that this man would fabricate this story and pass it off as true. Since the evening of that male's objectively false allegations, there have been multiple investigations on the officer and a number of political figures publicly furthering the false narrative. Personally, I believe the male should be arrested for false reports to law enforcement. There is overwhelming evidence to convict him. I can assure you, if this was another person that did not have the political backing and proceeded to falsely accuse someone of a crime, there would have been charges. Tonight, I respectfully request that we work together to rectify this situation. As you know, police officers in our city wear body-worn cameras as well as dash cams. While I don't have the authority to release the footage, I can assure you any concerns regarding the incident can be found in the footage. If you have the opportunity to watch the video and find no issues with the officer's conduct, I ask that you publicly rescind the allegations of racial profiling by the officer. I ask that you condemn the man who made the allegations. There is real racism in our country. We do not need to create events when it is actually occurring. I know that our police, as well as the members of our city government, must be held to a higher standard. The FOP is here for any conversation regarding inequality. Well before the murder of George Floyd, we have worked with our community to build a better and stronger Bethlehem. We have proudly sponsored our great NAACP personally and financially for years. I even spoke at this year's Dr. King celebration, and I consider it one of my greatest offices as a police officer, greatest honors as a police officer. Councilwoman Negron, you've come to me several times for feeding our Hispanics at the Hispanic Center feeding our seniors at the Hispanic Center to donations to the Linfield Public Housing Community Center. Councilman Colon, we've read Dr. Seuss to the amazing kids at Marvine Elementary for years, and we've seen firsthand the incredible work that school is doing for our young people. Councilman Callahan, when you asked if a police officer would compete in a boxing match to benefit at-risk youth and gun violence, I trained for 3 months before COVID-19 forced the event to be canceled. And the FOP doesn't just act when people in power ask for help. This past winter, Officer Shea, who will soon be a mother, met an African-American woman who did not have a refrigerator, but did have a list of health problems. The FOP purchased one for her and delivered it to her. I'm sure you didn't read the press release, but that's only because it was kept private. The female stated that her neighbors might not be as appreciative of the police, and she feared retribution. Last year, we were dispatched to the Southside Little League garage because someone decided it was worth their time to damage and vandalize the property. I got a call from the officer on scene who said, "Someone damaged Little League stuff and the FOP is going to pay for it." I said, okay, consider it done. And again, you wouldn't have known because we didn't make it public. The money used from these donations comes directly from the paychecks of your city police officers. This is not the police department. These are your police officers. And I know there's a stigma in our minority communities with police, just like I know there are social and economic injustices within our minority communities. Our officers cannot come close to healing the pain caused by the murder of George Floyd, nor can we take responsibility. We can't change certain truths about our city. We can't change the fact that the majority of public housing is made up of our minority residents, or the fact that an overwhelming number of our juvenile runaways are minorities. Ask Liberty High School for the breakdown of their expelled students each year by race. Your police officers are the band-aid of society. Councilwoman Van Wert, last week you stated that the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. I can assure you I have seen enough evil for several lifetimes. I've held your loved ones up as my partner cut the electrical cord holding their lifeless bodies. I performed CPR on a 20-year-old female with a gunshot wound to the head. I knew I couldn't save her. But I also knew that her family would want me to do everything I possibly could. I've heard a 5-year-old boy describe his rape as being tickled because a child doesn't comprehend what just happened to them. Your police carry the memories of these sins every day of their life to the point where we can seem unaffected by it on scene because it's just become our norm. And I hear from the naysayers, "Well, you signed up for this. No one is forcing you to be a cop," and fair enough. I have a profession where someone has threatened to rape my mother, and it's accepted by everybody in this room that it's just part of my job. And I still love my job. I can't exactly start selling insurance after living this life. We're blessed to have the police department we have. We're blessed to have the city we live in. We've had your support in the past, and I'll continue to try and earn it. I can't promise you perfection. At the end of the day, we're just imperfect people like everyone else. But if you want to work together and make our community even stronger, we're here to work with you. The people in this room might not be able to change the country, but we can be an example for other communities. Hard work and an unreasonable amount of hope can accomplish great things. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you here tonight, and I did not touch on the marijuana ordinance, but as I told President Waldron, I am willing to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us this evening and giving your statement. Clearly, there is a lot that goes into being a police officer here in Bethlehem and anywhere in the country. And currently, I can understand that there is some tension based on some of the comments that you made, and I would also understand that you want to clear the record and defend your other members of the police department. So I thank you for coming out and joining us this evening. Obviously, it's not easy to step up here and give your remarks, even though we're in a room that's kind of empty. We do have, you know, all the council members are joining us, as well as folks are watching on YouTube too. So I will turn to members of council, since you did say that you were willing to have a conversation. I think that's important too. If you do want to have an honest and fair dialogue, I think that starts with, you know, this is a good starting point for that. So I thank you for joining us. And are there any members of council that had any questions for Mr. Adela this evening, or any other comments on his remarks? Mr. Reynolds?
I have a question for Mr. Adela. In the first paragraph there, when you were talking, what was the line you said there about the brown and white newspaper?
Yeah, the brown and white newspaper is from Lehigh University, which is really what jump-started all this publicly.
Did you use the word ironic?
Yeah, and I understand where you're getting at, Councilman, and I don't appreciate the insinuation that what I'm saying is anything more than what I said. It's clearly, we're living in a time where racial allegations are made by members, and there are some people in our society that are really affected by the police negatively, and it's our duty to correct that. But at the same time, justice for all means justice for all, including any allegations made against our police officers. So where I see where you're going with this, I'll just cut it off and say, I understand what I said, and as a brown American, I know what I said, and I've heard it said by other council members who do happen to be Hispanic in the past as well.
I had not asked the question yet, but I was just going to ask you that with the current state of conversations in this country about interactions between our communities and the police department, I was just making sure that I heard correctly that you said that this ironically started in the newspaper called The Brown and White.
Yes.
And what was the statement there that you made in the paragraph? And I apologize that we're not there. We don't have a copy of the statement. That the statement you made about where our low income communities are.
I'm not quite sure.
Something about where they're located or who lives there.
I don't recall that. If anybody else can clarify what you're trying to get at. Oh, I think you meant Yasko Park being a high crime area? Is that what I said?
There was a paragraph in there where I believe, and I might be wrong because you were speaking for several minutes there, where you had said something about where crime occurs.
I believe my statement was that Yasko Park is a known high crime area.
But I thought there was something else about, and I can go back and listen to the tape, that after this is something about it's not the police department's something out of your control about who lives in these areas.
Yeah, well, for example, I'll answer your question with anecdotal evidence. I worked for my first 7 years Southside night shift, and then I switched to Bethlehem Housing Authority unit, public housing unit, where I worked for the last 3 years. So if you look at my arrests from the last 3 years, you're going to see that about 80 to 90% of my arrests were minorities. Now, does that in of itself make me a racist? Or does that in of itself a reflection of the community that I was working in? And yes, we do have a higher Hispanic population in our housing area, but when Hurricane Maria happened and there were so many people that were displaced that needed hope and needed somewhere to start again, Bethlehem Housing was there. And I'm glad that they were, and I welcome them, and I hope they find peace and happiness and success in our country. I'm sorry, in our area, in our city. But, you know, it's not a reflection of the police department when your neighborhood has maybe 3 reported crimes a year, but other streets and neighborhoods require constant and complete police attention. I mean, you can't equally patrol the entirety of the city when at the north end of Main Street, at, you know, way past like Alex Mill, there's nothing that's happening out there. But the citizens who need us the most likely live in a lower income area. And that doesn't necessarily mean that there's a certain percentage of racial makeup. It just means that in the lower income areas, they need more help from the police department.
Thank you. And thank you for coming today, and thank you for being honest with your statement. I think that there's a lot in there that I personally might disagree with, but I do think that some of my comments I will save for later on in the meeting when we hear from the chief and we kind of talk about a couple different things that we are proposing as far as the way to move forward. Thank you, Mr. Waldron.
Thank you, Mr. Reynolds. Is there any other members of council who had any questions or comments for Mr. Adela? Mr. Klum?
Thank you, Mr. Waldron. I don't really have any questions, Sergeant Adela. I just want to say thanks for coming out and giving the FOP's point of view. But moving forward, I know this is just a council meeting tonight. I don't know how many people are tuning in from home. Obviously, town hall is pretty empty right now. But I think it's important that we continue different discussions, whether it's the public safety committee meeting that we're in the middle of coordinating, or as conversations continue, I think it would be important to hear perspective from the FOP or from our officers and not just the administration as we discuss different initiatives moving forward and whether we agree, disagree, or are in between. I would like to continue to hear from the FOP standpoint and input as we look at working with the administration on different initiatives moving forward. And like we discussed at the last meeting, and I'm sure we'll continue discussing tonight, and conversation keeps going. And as we keep having these different discussions and conversations and public dialogue and openness, I think it's important to get the department's perspective also. So,
thank you. Thank you.
Anything else for Mr. Adela this evening? Ms. Francie Smith?
Hi, Officer Adela. Again, I want to also thank you for coming tonight and speaking. I know these are difficult times for everyone. I'm precedented in some respects, not in others. But I guess I just wanted to say thank you, and I'm hopeful that the officers in the city are open and willing to engage in the community as we move forward, especially with the community engagement initiative that we're proposing, so that we can, you know, as I think we all believe, and you even said in your comments, you know, perfection doesn't exist pretty much anywhere. I've never seen perfection, and there's always room for improvement. So I hope that the officers are willing to work together collaboratively with the city and with you know, all the community stakeholders to increase the trust and also build collaborative working relationships. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else from members of council, Mr. Adela, this evening? All right. Again, thank you for joining us and coming out and giving us the FOP's perspective as we move forward in our dialogue and conversation regarding public safety in the city of Bethlehem. I hope we can continue to have an open and productive dialogue.
I generally thank you all for letting me be here and speak with you, and please know that you can reach out to me at any time, and again, we might disagree, we might, but I'm absolutely dedicated to working with you for whatever issue we can resolve, so thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dell. We will continue on with our public comment section for this evening. We have a couple names signed up on the list. I'm going to call out to those folks first, and then I will open it up to other folks who would like to call when that time comes in. That number is 610-997-7963. At this point, I'll be calling Mr. Zong. Good evening, Mr. Zahn. This is Bethlehem City Council.
Good evening.
If you would please give your name and address for the record, and then proceed to give your comments to council, please.
Okay, very good. My name is Greg Zahn. I live at 224 East Mercator Road in Bethlehem. I live here with my gifted and proud Latina wife, who also works on behalf of the young in our schools like I do. First, I want to say I appreciate that you all volunteer your time and service to our city, you know, to which I'm fortunate to have been born. Thank you. Now, like many Americans, I'm very upset on behalf of our affected, and I use that word for a particular reason, black and brown siblings in Bethlehem, the U.S., and, of course, all over the world, as well as, you know, all the members of our family, our city family and larger families. So I have several comments and questions. I was raised to respect authority, the police, and elected officials. I try to always demonstrate that. I, however, am privileged and not for anything that I have done or earned necessarily. So I have three parts to my comment. The first is our unanswered June 3rd letter my wife and I wrote to the mayor in responding to his comments on Minneapolis. And I copied city council. I asked six questions, and possibly most importantly, why has public dialogue not been solicited? Now, I realize we're in a city council meeting right now. I don't really think it's adequate, but the questions are here. I want to say, I want to ask them, what are we doing in our city to ensure justice, care, and protection of and from Ben Franklin's unaffected, mentioned by Mayor Donchez, for our affected, you know, brothers and sisters who still suffer with incredible resilience? Question two, so what are we doing? Question two, what changes have been instituted since the last time we met after the violent death of a black man at the hands of police in America? Question three, what leadership messages are we sending based on our actions within and based on our direct communication to the outside? My point being that I really feel like communication is lacking. Will, you know, and now I ask this question to Mayor Donchez, all of these, will you ask the affected what they need? Will you, number five, will you identify the affected directly? As far as I'm aware, they remain unnamed. Number six, so what changes does city leadership recommend now on behalf of our very diverse family? And when will leadership speak with all of its people? Again, we're in council meeting. It's still a very restricted way of speaking, and I really feel something should have been said to the public much more broadly and loudly. Why? I get the feeling that the city has not expressed urgency on behalf of a large part of our family. You know, could be demonstrated much better by a more public, perhaps virtual dialogue like this. My second item, so those were six questions. My second item, on June 9th, Council President and Councilwoman Francie Smith sent a memo to Chief DeLuzio asking for information regarding police department's policies, training, and techniques. I have to ask, why were Councilman Colon and Councilwoman Negron not a party to that June 9th memo? That's a little shocking to me. Hopefully they were but I'd like to hear that. Why doesn't council already have the requested information? Why are they not, or why is that information not already available to the public that is served? I saw the answer, I read the article, but that's still a question I think many have. And what does the city leadership have to say in response to the Bethlehem Gadfly post of Beehive Ms. Brina Holland? She asked numerous questions regarding the treatment of Bethlehem citizens. I'd like to hear those questions answered publicly. And lastly, somewhat related is city appointments. I understand several are to be announced tonight, and I'd like to know what minority candidates were considered for those positions. If for privacy reasons you can't say who, of course, well, how many were considered? How many resumes were received? I think this is a real serious issue. And how are they solicited resumes? And should these methods be reconsidered? So ultimately, the biggest, probably the theme of this is communication. I'm really kind of stunned as things were unfolding and still are, that communication really doesn't seem to be, to seem as important as it really should. And that's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zell. Next up is Mr. Gallagher.
President Waldron.
Good evening, Mr. Gallagher.
Thank you, President Waldron. Ed Gallagher, 49 West Greenwich. Presenting Bethlehem Moment 24. April 23rd, 1997, a drug bust goes bad. After prior investigation and working with a confidential informant, at approximately 11 p.m. on April 23rd, 1997, a group of about a half a dozen Bethlehem police officers attempted to exercise a search warrant at a house on the south side in which lived a suspected drug dealer known to be armed and his girlfriend. Here are the skeletal facts that we can rehearse in the short time here. Officers 1 and 2 were in front of the house, the rest of the officers in the rear. Officer 2 opened the front window, and Officer 1 threw into the living room a flashbang distraction device that immediately and unexpectedly started a fast-moving fire. Officer 1 entered the house and shot the suspect as he was starting to move up the steps to the second floor. Officer 1, using what is described as a submachine gun, fired approximately 16 shots, 11 hitting the suspect, all in the back. The suspect's girlfriend was on the second floor, saw the suspect on the steps, and exited the fiery house through a window. The suspect died from the gunshot wound, and his body was burned beyond recognition in the fire that rendered the house a total loss. Questions about the way the police handled this event arose at once. The Pennsylvania State Police and the Attorney General's Office investigated, and in September 1997, 5 months after the event, cleared the police of any wrongdoing. The suspect's family sued the city and the officers for breach of the suspect's civil rights and for use of excessive force. A central point of contention at trial was initial interaction between Officer 1 and the suspect. Officer 1 said he shot at the suspect because the suspect shot at him. No shell casing from the suspect's gun was found. The suspect's girlfriend said she did not see him with a gun on the steps. The civil suit against the city and the officers began September 2003, 6.5 years after the event. The trial took 6 months, ending March 2004. The jury deliberated 9 days. The jury told the judge they were deadlocked at 10-2. Both sides agreed to waive the need for unanimity and to accept the 10-2 verdict, whatever it was. The verdict was guilty. Officer 1 had violated the suspect's civil rights by using excessive force, and the city failed to properly supervise the officers and had failed to create policies for the emergency response team. Rather than further deliberation before the jury and the prospect of years of appeals, both sides agreed to settle the case before the penalty phase of the trial was to begin. The mutually agreed on terms of settlement were, number one, the city would pay $7.89 million. Number two, seek accreditation. Number three, hire an independent consultant to make sure that the city's police practices met national standards. And four, seek a grant to instruct officers in the constitutional rights of citizens. A key to the settlement, without further jury involvement, was the city's promise to seek outside help to improve the police force. And the offer by Mayor Callahan, in office only 2 months at that time, to meet privately with the plaintiffs and make an apology. The police, however, did not apologize, and in fact, Officer One was given an award by a police organization. Interviewed afterward, the juror said the suspect had a right to shoot, if in fact he did, which wasn't clear, because the police provoked the suspect to defend himself by storming in late at night without properly identifying themselves. Their verdict, the jury's verdict, they said, focused on civil rights, not on whether the suspect was using or selling illegal drugs. That was the sentiment of most public comment reported in the morning call. It was recognition that the suspect bore some blame for what happened to him, but the police were described as a bunch of ninjas and as commandos that took into their own hands the power to be judge, jury, and executioner. The anticlimax to this long saga was a battle between the mayor and city council on how to fund the $7.89 million payment. The mayor advanced a plan, council rejected it. Council put forth a plan, the mayor vetoed it, and council overrode the veto. The city finally finished paying off the $7.89 million judgment in 2015. End of story. But the point of this Bethlehem moment is its relevance to our own cultural moment. Here is an example from Bethlehem's past when lack of proper oversight of the police department caused big trouble. We recognize the dual accreditations that the department now enjoys in large part as a result of this event and which the chief told us about last meeting. But we also should not lose sight of the need for continual oversight of the police department and continual improvement of department policies, practices, training, and community involvement. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak, President Waldron and Council. Fight the good fight. We need you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gallagher. At this time, we'll take comment on anyone who has not signed up ahead of time. If you'd like to call in, our number is 610-997-7963. Good evening, Bethlehem City Council.
Good evening, Bethlehem City Council.
Hi, my name is Maggie Urban-Walla. I am a resident of 808 North New Street, Bethlehem, PA 18018.
Hello. I'm not sure if you have muted your YouTube feed, but if you could do that, that would be helpful. And if you'd like to give your comments to council.
Sure. Yeah, as I said, my name is Maggie. I'm a resident of Bethlehem, PA. And my comment is regarding the 8 Can't Wait proposal and instead proposing the 8 to Abolition, which has been supported by the Black Lives Matter movement as the 8 Can't Wait proposal has not. The 8 Can't Wait proposal depends on police oversight, which, as we've seen in some of the places that have a majority of those proposals in place, does not work. Chokeholds being banned are part of the 8 Can't Wait proposal. In New York City, where Eric Garner was choked to death, that was actually enforced there. In places like the LAPD, the Chicago PD, they have 6 out of 8 of those proposals in place, and yet still have the highest rate of police brutality.
think the Black Lives Matter movement is at the forefront of the movement that we're currently seeing today. I think that their proposal should be the one that we are looking at. So I would encourage the City Council to look at the 8 to abolition proposal instead of focusing on the 8 can't wait, which has not been supported by the Black Lives Matter movement. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. If anyone else would like to make a comment to council, the number is 610-997-7963. We will accept comment for any subject being voted on this evening or any other subject you would like to make comment to council. The number is 610-997-7963. This will be the public's last opportunity to make comment to council this evening. 610-997-7963. Seeing no more comments, we will move along with our agenda this evening. Is there any old business from members of council? Communications 6A.
A memorandum from Councilman Reynolds and Councilwoman Cramsey Smith to Police Chief Mark DeLuzio requesting information on police use of force directives. The memo also discusses the creation of a citywide community engagement initiative that would involve a broad coalition of residents, police officers, representatives from our schools, social justice organizations, and other entities and individuals.
The item is for informational purposes only. Potential resolutions will be discussed at a future meeting. Communication 6B.
A memorandum from Lenny Lazarchak, Director of Financial Services, requesting Council to consider a resolution for the destruction of financial service records. As listed in the attached exhibit, the director has reviewed the Municipal Records Retention Act, and the records fall within categories where destruction is permitted.
The resolution will be placed in the July 7th agenda, Communication 6C.
A memorandum from Edward Boscola, Director of Water and Sewer Resources, recommending a contract with Orlando Diefendurfer Electrical Contractors, Inc. for electrical construction work related to the Mountaintop Pump Station renovation project. The term of the contract runs 210 days from the notice to proceed. The cost is $197,980, and there are no renewals.
Resolution 10B is on the agenda. Communication 6D.
A memorandum from Edward Boscola, Director of Water and Sewer Resources, recommending a contract with Zimmerman Environmental for general construction work related to the Mountaintop Pump Station renovation project. The term of the contract runs 210 days from the notice to proceed. The cost is $354,000, and there are no renewals.
Resolution 10C is on the agenda. Communication 6E.
A memorandum from Alicia Miller-Carner, Director of Community and Economic Development, recommending a contract with the Greater Lehigh Valley Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber provides marketing with the city through its management and operation of the Bethlehem Chamber Board in coordination with the Downtown Bethlehem Association. The term of the contract runs from January 1st, 2020 through December 31st, 2020. The cost is $75,000, and there's a $75,000 potential renewal.
Resolution 10D is on the agenda. Reports. I have no reports this evening, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. President. A couple key points here. Number one, I want to take the opportunity really to thank Mike Alcall and his staff, and Alicia Carter and her staff, really for doing, in my opinion, an excellent job in a very short period of time to help small businesses throughout the city. I think the parklets look great. We had tremendous feedback, very positive feedback. In fact, I think it's something we should consider, and I'm gonna consider doing it again next year. I think the response has been very positive on both sides of town. They made 100 parklets. I think we've put out about 80, 85. So it's certainly something that I think has been a positive for the businesses, and also something I will consider doing again next year. Second, on the update on the City of Bethel COVID cases as of 6:15, we've had 1,008 positive cases in the city and 69 deaths in the City of Bethel as of
6:15. In response to Councilman Reynolds and Councilwoman Gramsci Smith's request, we did provide a memorandum to City Council dated June 15th, which will go out on the website tomorrow. We responded to the 8 points. And the Bethlehem Police Department is a highly trained, very professional department. As my memo indicates, and the professor made reference to it, the Herco case was a turning point in Bethlehem's history with the police department. It made the Bethlehem Police Department evaluate itself, and many of the recommendations that came from that event have been incorporated along with state and national accreditation. But we do not intend this as a statement that there are no deficiencies, that every officer conforms at all times, or that untoward events do not occur as perfections aspired, but not achieved here or elsewhere, to my knowledge, with the force to size of Bethlehem. You could always get better, and we're trying to strive to get better, critique ourselves. But as Professor Gallagher said, that Herco case, and I was on City Council, was a turning point in the Bethlehem Police Department because it made us do a self-evaluation and made us get the state accreditation and national accreditation. So many of the points we're talking about, we've incorporated because of that event. But we always have to strive to get better. It's constantly critique and have self-reflection. As the memo to City Council, which will go on the website tomorrow, we do address the use of force directives of chokeholds, require de-escalation, require warnings before shootings, exhaust all alternatives before shootings, duty to intervene, ban shooting at vehicles, require use of force continuum, and require comprehensive reporting. And I had issued a directive to the chief and the deputy chief and to the city solicitor to review all the policies and to make as much public as possible. And we've decided that our use of force policy, which we're, I think, maybe one of the few departments in the valley, we presented it to City Council. It will go on the website tomorrow for the public to review. So the use of force policy, we signed off on it. Will be on the website tomorrow. Members of council have a copy of that. We are reviewing other information to try to put as much information as we can on the website pertaining to the department. So it's being reviewed by the solicitor, by the chief, the deputy chief, myself, and BA Mr. Evans. In addition, we certainly want to work with City Council as we move forward and having a dialogue. As a follow-up to the ABE NAACP vigil, representatives from the local chapter of the NAACP, the mayor, the police chief, the deputy chief, and the president of FLP met with the leaders of the NAACP to discuss police and community issues. It was agreed that a citizens advisory committee, suggestion of Mrs. Lee, be comprised of community leaders would be established to address police and community issues. Community leaders from education, from healthcare, from social agencies, etc. And we hope to all agree to have us do a press release and a mission statement next week. Mrs. Lee feels very strongly from her leadership role and from the national organization and the local chapter of NAACP, that is something that she wants to be involved in. And we certainly want to work with her and be part of the Citizens Advisory Committee. In addition, I've decided, we'll do a press release on this, that the City of Bethel will have fireworks on the 4th of July. And we'll issue a release. Hopefully people will practice social distancing, but the fireworks will go on. Tomorrow, City Hall will be open to the public. Chief Novotnik has done an excellent job at marking everything in the front. People will come into the lobby, etc. And there'll be people to guide them. We're going to try to do as much business in a lobby area as possible, so people do not have to go up to the third, fourth, or fifth floor. The security system is almost complete in City Hall for elevator access. We just have a few items to get repaired, and we'll be in good shape on that end. And we do have a follow-up meeting tomorrow with the two local representatives of Black Lives Matter. They have asked that I would reach out to Dr. Roy to discuss education issues, because that was one of their main concerns when we met 2 weeks ago. And we will be meeting with Dr. Roy tomorrow to discuss education and various other issues of their concern tomorrow afternoon. The parks, we did open the parks, and it's my intention that when we go green, hopefully maybe next Friday, that will lead to the putting back the basketball hoops so we could have play basketball. Administrative orders. Administrative order number 16, I hereby reappoint Anna Smith, 631 Ridge Street, Bethlehem, to the Bethel Human Relations Commission. The appointment is effective through March 2023.
The resolution to confirm is sponsored by Ms. Cramsey Smith and Mr. Cologne.
Discussion? Dr. Van Wert? Dr. Van Wert, we can't hear you.
Better?
100%.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So when I first joined council, I was kind of shocked at the process that was in place for how people got onto our authority boards and commissions, otherwise known as ABCs, that it seemed that it was just rubber stamp by council to approve anyone that the mayor put forward. And indeed, this has been the argument for many council people continuing to approve reappointments to commissions, authorities, boards, and commissions for people who have been on for years and years and decades. One of the first things I had asked for was that resumes of people who were coming forward from the mayor be included in our packet so we could actually vet somebody and see do they have, you know, the background, the insight, the determination to be on these boards. You know, we still don't have attendance given for reappointments. But overall, there's this ongoing kind of notion in Bethlehem that this is the mayor's prerogative, but I'm pushing back against that because I feel that the reason City Council was given the vote instead of just the mayor just appointing whoever he wanted was so that we, as representatives of the citizens of Bethlehem, could ensure that our authorities, boards, and commissions had people on it who actually represented the citizens, who looked like the citizens, who come from different areas of the city, who come from different income levels, different perspectives. That's the point of City Council to me. So I bring this up in for the first administrative order because last time this came up with the parking authority, I had the same objection. And one of the suggestions that was made by President Waldron was that we invoke term limits. And I thought a lot about this as well because, you know, there's any term limits discussion, there's pros and cons to the approach. And the problem that I had with it was that our authorities, boards, and commissions they're all very vastly different beasts. Some have way more power and influence on day-to-day lives. Some use our tax dollars. Some leverage the borrowing capacity of the city. And, you know, these are ones that I feel need particular scrutiny because that's where power is held. Power in the city is held in the authorities, boards, and commissions. And by not having a voice in that in council, we allow the administration to have one blanket approach to how things are done, and it doesn't represent this city. So, for example, the first administrative order is for the Human Relations Commission. I would hate to institute term limits for a commission that we have trouble even filling all the spots on it. It doesn't seem to me that that would be a helpful thing to have in order for the Human Relations Commission. So then I thought, well, maybe we should just apply it to our powerful commissions, or however you want to say the commissions who affect day-to-day life. And I'm thinking the Bethlehem Parking Authority, the Zoning Hearing Board, the Bethlehem Planning Commission that we're voting on tonight, and the BREA, and in some circumstances, the Bethlehem Redevelopment Authority. Right now, they're not as active. And I just wanted to have an open dialogue with council about these feelings. I think that the first speaker and public comment tonight brought up this kind of haphazard approach that we have to staffing our authorities and boards and commissions. Often what we hear from the administration is they cannot find the people to staff this, that there just isn't the resumes out there. But we are cloaked. We have no way of knowing who has submitted their resumes unless they have also submitted it to council. Some people don't do that. We don't know how the mayor goes about finding people to go on the authorities and boards and commissions. And how does he vet it? I understand that it is his prerogative to put people forward, but it is also our prerogative and indeed our duty as people who represent the citizens of Bethlehem to make sure that our ABCs look like Bethlehem. So that's really the main thing that I wanted to say tonight. I still think that this is a huge responsibility of council, and clearly if current events have taught us anything, it's that the way things have been done in the past is not always the right thing to do right now. Circumstances change, cities change, and we are a reflection of the city. So I hope that we can consider a different way of approaching how we put people on these authorities and boards and commissions. That's what I had to say. Thanks.
Thank you, Dr. Van Wert. Any other discussion? Clerk, please call the roll. Sorry, Ms. Negron.
I was checking if anybody else wanted to say something. Thank you, Dr. Van Wert, for your words. I know this is something that both you and I have been very vocal about it for the last year or so. And because of this conversation we had last year, I actually wrote an article under your view. Morning Call reported it back in August, where I was actually asking the people, you know, from whatever they were reading the paper, whether it was East Long Island or Bethlehem, to be actively engaged, to be civically engaged, to be part of this movement. You know, being elected official is one way, but being in commissions and boards is another. And after that article, I received actually phone calls from members of the community, from the Latino community, obviously. But I have many individuals that show interest, and they ask, what's the process? What do you need to do? And I said, you know, but, you know, look at the commissions, look at the boards. If there's anything in there that interests you, send me a resume to the mayor. And, you know, try to get out and be involved, be part of it. And many of them said, why will I send the email? You know, they're not going to, the mayor is not going to appoint me. Like, why? Well, you know, we look very different than everybody else on those boards and commission. And I challenged them, I really did. You know, last Thursday, I sent all of you members of council an email. I forward you the email after, an hour after the mayor or the clerk actually sent us these three appointments. Specifically sharing an email with a resume from a member of our community that back in February sent a resume to the mayor requesting interest to be part of the planning commission. And here we go again with a list of three appointments. After this, I actually reached out again to some of the people that called me, and they have forgotten about it. And you know, I said, the mayor cannot appoint somebody if he doesn't have resumes. We need to get involved. And there's interest. You know, there's interest. I've been talking with individuals, and they want to be part of commissions and boards. So, you know, with 76,000 people in the city, you can't tell me you don't find somebody to serve. So we have, and, you know, again, I've been proved wrong when, like I said in the email I sent everybody on Thursday, when my Latino, members of the Latino community said, why would I bother sending my resume if I'm not going to be appointed, you know, unless it's for the Latino Advisory Council. That's all we can qualify for. So, you know, it's disappointing because, you know, again, we need, it's our responsibility as members of council to be the check and balances. We're not being the check and balances. Where are the people? You're going to tell me that nobody, you know, I'm sick and tired of hearing this professionally. And at all levels, people say, oh, I have to hire another white person because there's no person of color that sent me a resume or that qualified for the job. Really? Really? Well, I'm going to tell you something. My three daughters were raised right here in Southside Bethlehem. They got master's degree and doctorates, and they don't want to come back to Bethlehem. Why? Because why would you want to come back to a place that they're not going to hire you, they're going to look down to you, they're going to treat you differently? You know, and they're not the only three, I'm telling you. So we have to really think, you know, this is the right time to think about what's our role as members of council, check and balances. That's what we're supposed to be doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Negron. Mr. Mayor, I think there's a little frustration here because this is the same kind of conversation that we had last year about what is the process to reappoint someone based on their level of service and interest, and if they have a track record that's generally positive, versus when do you decide to, you know, tap someone new who might be interested in it. And again, it is a kind of a closed process, so we don't know what that level of interest is. Clearly, some of the boards, they're struggling to find a full roster of folks because there's just not enough people who are interested in volunteering for those specific those roles. But some of the other ones, it seems that there may be more interest in. We did get that resume from Ms. Negron last week. I think it was Mr. Burgos, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And there was a little back and forth dialogue that we had seen with Alex about, you know, his resume and availability as well. So I just wasn't sure if you were interested in talking a little bit about, I mean, it's difficult because I don't know, there might be 10 or so different boards and commissions in the city, and all of them are very different from each other, but what is the general kind of roster you have of folks who are interested, and what is that process you have to keep them on hand or vet them for future appointments?
Well, generally when we see that a term is coming to an end, I have Alex reach out, or Stephanie or Kelly, to see if they're interested in possibly being reappointed. I am not one that believes that you're only, if you get appointed to a board, that you're there for one term or two terms. The volunteers that give their time in the community, and that's number one. Number two, if they're interested, then I check and see what their attendance is, what their input is, and are they really being involved in the process. I mean, take Anna Smith, she's been very involved in the community, very involved in South Bethlehem, for example, and in my opinion, she deserves a reappointment. Under our form of government, it is the mayor's prerogative to give a recommendation to city council, and it's city council's prerogative to either vote up or vote down. And if they vote down, then I submit another name. Now, that's under our mayor council form of government. There has been times when I have removed people that I have not reappointed them, one or two on the planning commission, I remember. So it's a process. If they're interested, I evaluate them, and if I think they deserve another term, then I bring their names to city council. I would say of the probably 15 to 18 boards that we have, there are not that many that have vacancies. There's a few, but most of them are pretty close to being at 100%. Some are definitely more difficult than the others, and I do agree with Dr. Van Wert. The main ones are the ones that she always makes reference to, and I certainly would have no problem sitting down with the councilwoman and reviewing the schedule for the rest of the year. I haven't even looked at it past this month, to be very honest with you, because we've been so busy with everything else around us, but I would have no problem sitting down with Councilwoman Van Wert and to go over the appointments for the balance of the year.
And I think another point that to press home is, do our boards, authorities, and commissions represent the people of Bethlehem? You know, what is what is the gender split, what is the, you know, geographic split from different parts of the city, you know, what is the racial split among those boards? Is it representative of the city? I mean, it's a rhetorical question, but I know the answer to that is no.
Right.
And at some point, you know, you can either take a passive role and say these are the people who have applied, or maybe there's some efforts that, you know, that the administration can work with council on to reach out to different groups that might be interested in serving but haven't, you know, been tapped to say, are you interested in serving? And I think just that question to start that dialogue might be helpful to have a little bit more diversity on some of those boards.
I certainly would support that.
Yeah, it's challenging though to do it at this point, you know, when we have it on the agenda already and then another name comes up as a potential replacement to someone who may be being reappointed or maybe being appointed to the first time as a response to what you have. It's my thought that this conversation should happen beforehand, as you're kind of alluding to, maybe sitting down with members of council to say, these are the ones that are coming up for the rest of the calendar year. What is your feeling on some of these appointments? Is there a way that we could, you know, maybe even shuffle things around where people may still be interested in serving, but we could move them to a different role and use their experience in the city and not turn our backs on them, but say, you know, empower them in a way to serve in a different role, and maybe open something up where we could bring in a new person who hasn't served before as well. When we get to the idea of term limits, though, that is pretty challenging as well to potentially push people away who are qualified and willing to serve and are doing a good job to say that they can no longer serve because they've been there for too long. Some of the boards also, like BREA, I know those appointments are staggered as far as, I believe they still are, anywhere from 5 to 1 year. So that gets tricky when you say you have a two-term limit and you only have a one-year appointment versus a two-term appointment for a five-year appointment can be a decade. So there are a lot of nuances to all these different things that we'd have to sit down and have some consideration about. Are there any other questions or comments from council at this point? Dr. Van Wert, you're still on mute there.
So the only other thing I wanted to point out that was brought to my attention during this whole process, over time, both before I was on council and after I was appointed, to have the authorities, boards, and commissions meet after 5 o'clock so that working people could attend. And my perspective has always been that of the citizen. What is it? People participate and show up at the Bethlehem Parking Authority at 4 o'clock. Work until 5, you know, that's regular people who cannot leave their job to go sit in on an authority or commission meeting that they really want to attend. And not only did it strike me during this whole kind of vetting of applicants for this thing, one of the reasons that the applicant who expressed interest in the Planning Commission in February was ultimately offered the blighted property review, and he had to say no, because he's a working person, and he works until 5 o'clock. Housing commissions refused the mayor's request on many parts, not all of them, but many of them refused the mayor's request to hold their meetings after 5 o'clock. And we have ostensibly cut out an entire portion of the electorate who's willing to serve, but cannot meet at 4 o'clock because they have normal working jobs. So once again, it draws this issue into great relief that our ABCs are these cloistered venues of power that are only accessible to a certain political class, and I think we need to really strongly consider how do we change this dynamic so that all of our citizens can participate both on the boards and coming before those commissions and speaking their minds. So I think it's really important, and I just don't want it to be dropped. Thank you.
Ms. Negron?
Yes, I also want to let the mayor know I am here, and I have said this before, I have individuals that have shared interest in all of the committees and boards and authorities. So I will keep trying, you know, maybe if somebody gets in, others will continue to send resumes, because as of right now, they just say they're not going to appoint me. But I'll gladly continue doing, and I will. I will continue reaching out to individuals and asking them. Now, for now on, I will make sure that they don't only send the resume to the mayor, but that they send the resume to all of you, so you can also see that there's also interest from other sides of the community. And, you know, it's time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Negron. And I will say, I have not had anyone reach out to me directly about being on any boards, authorities, and commissions. So obviously, as council people, we have much different orbits that we're in. And Mr. Grown, obviously you have your pulse, your finger on the pulse of the Hispanic community. So that's why a lot of those folks who I think we should try to get more involved are reaching out to you. So I would ask you, and maybe you could act as a liaison to try to include more people.
I'll be delighted to do that, but trust me, I will make sure that everybody sends their resume to you and to everybody else in council. Thank you. But I will be encouraging my community to do so. And I have also heard from non-Latinos about the process, you know, questioning, what do you need to do? How do you qualify to be in there? So there is interest. It's not just, you know, I'm reaching out to my community, but my community is not just the brown and black. I represent everybody in the city, and many that don't look like me has also asked me the question. So I think that we also have a role to play, being more proactive in the role of being the check and balances, and in the role of representing everybody in our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McGraw. Mr. Klum?
I think now would be a good time for, and I don't know them off the top of my head, I chair the Human Relations Commission, and I know we have a number of vacancies on the HRC, and I don't know which committees and authorities have councilmatic appointments, have vacancies that are councilmatic appointments, but I think now would be a good time to start getting an inventory together, and I could do that for the HRC, of what, from council's perspective, what vacancies are on that commission and other various boards that are councilmatic, would be councilmatic appointments. And then we could, start there amongst ourselves, trying to fill some of these with the individuals that Councilwoman Negron was talking about, and others that try to get, some of the vacancies filled using our appointments that we've opened.
And kind of piggybacking off of that, Mr. Mayor, would your office be willing to do kind of a total inventory of all the authorities, boards, and commissions?
Absolutely. No.
Let us know, a full roster of what is unfilled, if you will, and then which ones will be coming up for reappointment by the end of the year.
In fact, what we'll do is we'll do that, and we'll also give you the booklet of all the boards and commissions and the members that serve.
Thank you. Mr. Reynolds, do you have a comment? And then Ms. Cramsey-Smith after that.
I was just going to say that one of the things, and I'm going to save some of my comments for new business when I talk about our proposal for the community engagement initiative, but one of the things that I do think we need to do is we need to understand that because of traditional structures in our city, you have had certain groups of people in certain areas of the city that have been underrepresented. And I think that, the sooner that we get that on the forefront of all of our minds, and I think getting not just the list of the boards and commissions and all the members, but also their dates when they are up. So, we kind of see those, and, I pay very close attention to most things with the city, but I don't know exactly when everybody's up for reappointment oftentimes until I get the agenda. It's a conversation that we need to have about how do we get as many people as possible involved in these conversations, because people do bring different experiences. And I know that in the email that Ms. Negron had sent about Mr. Burgos and his potential interest in the Planning Commission is that, if that's the case and that's where he's interested in, I think the next appointment probably would be October or November or something like that. I tried to look it up today, but I'm not sure. So there should be an opportunity then for the mayor and his administration to have that conversation to see whether or not he's a good fit for that board or not. I think that, you know, in general, though, we need to do a better job of trying to get as many people as possible involved in these conversations, especially when they may affect, when some of these conversations affect communities that have been traditionally underrepresented on these boards in the decision-making, whether or not it's parking or whatever it might be. And I think that that is really, really important when we talk about, you know, the community engagement initiative with police going forward, but it's part of the same conversation. We need to include more types of experience throughout the city and more histories throughout the city onto these boards and commissions. And I think that's on all of us to try to help find those people. And I applaud Councilman Grone and others that have sent those resumes over. And we need to get more representation there. Thank you.
Ms. Cramsey Smith? You're on mute, Ms. Cramsey Smith.
As the newest member of council, I have to say that this has been one of the most frustrating aspects of serving on council, because I find it difficult that I just get information about, like, a reappointment on a Friday for a Tuesday meeting. And usually, you know, there's no conflict, but when there is a conflict, it makes it challenging to reach out and learn and speak to the people that are being proposed or already on the commission and try to vet them. So I would really recommend that, I've already spoken to the mayor regarding this and suggested if we can get more of, like someone recommended, an inventory of those on council. I think President Waldron said that, as well as more notice, you know, getting notice like a couple hours before a meeting or a couple of days before a meeting regarding someone that's interested is just really difficult. And again, I feel like with the Planning Commission appointee tonight, I mean, it sort of is, again, last minute, and apparently the other person that was being considered wasn't a resident, so that was all for naught. So I feel like it's sort of just left that there we are. So again, I would just, you know, hope that we can sort of streamline this whole process so it is it works out in a better fashion. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cramsey Smith. Any other comments? Mr. Callahan?
Thank you. I wouldn't agree with term limits for any of the boards, because I don't want to limit any. It's either doing a good job, and so, you know, some of the boards and commissions that we do have are very difficult to find people. Mr. Burdos is interested, or anybody else, no matter who it is, that you try to get on any type of board or commission. What it is, it doesn't matter if it's a lower level board or what Dr. Van Wert's calling the more powerful boards. The main thing is just get on the board and when openings, you know, I think when the the more as Dr. Van Wert said, whether it's RIA or planning or zoning, I think it's pretty important because they are influential boards. They get people that have background in those types of things, whether it's planning or zoning, to keep those types of people that are on zoning and planning on, because they, you know, you can't just, I couldn't go on zoning right now. Know all people with zoning. And some of the people that are on here have been doing this for, you know, 20, 25 years, and they're very professional at it. It's almost, if I wanted to join zoning someday, if I got off council, I would probably have to, I know Lehigh Valley zoning and planning has classes that you can take. I would recommend anybody to take those types of classes on planning, on municipal planning, on municipal zoning, and that would be a great thing to put on their resume to get on those boards. I don't know if there's any classes or anything you can take to become more knowledgeable about parking, but I know it took me maybe 5 or 6 years before I really understood all the smaller, finer points of the parking system. You just can't go into zoning and BREA and planning and parking authority and a water authority and just jump in there, you know, right from the get-go. Then you gotta get some background on it. So, some of the, you know, I'm proposing I'm trying to get an equal pay ordinance passed. And one of the things that happened was that the Human Relations Commission said that they were short people. I did talk to some people from the Northampton County Bar, and they're telling me, you know, when you pass an ordinance, most businesses, the Human Relations Department in those companies, they realize this is the new law and this is what it is, so there's not going to be a lot of violations. But it risks, when these cases, there are 4 or 5 cases a year that might go to, that, you know, if someone has a complaint, I'm going to, at our next meeting, we do send it to the Human Relations Commission and let them deal with the 4 or 5 issues that come before them a year. I don't think it'll be 4 or 5 years, to tell you the truth. You know, the plan with that equal pay ordinance is to allow people a whole year of grace period of a year to get up to speed and file all the human relations departments and managers and owners of all these businesses. And if there is a violation, we move it to the Human Relations Commission. I don't know what the process would be, but I'd be totally supportive of it. If we can possibly, if there's only 4 or 5 people on a Human Relations Commission, I would be more than welcome to add another 5 positions to that commission. And I'm sure Mr. Burdos or anybody else that's interested, there's an opening there, and that'd be a great place to start. So,
thank you for your comments, Mr. Callahan. I will also mention we're having a little bit of trouble with your connection on your end as far as hearing you clearly. If there's anything you can do to increase that. Is there any other comments on Administrative Order 7B1 for Anna Affleck Smith to the HRC? The clerk will please call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert? Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0.
Thank you. Administrative Order 17, I hereby reappoint Anna Smith, 631 Ridge Street, Bethlehem, to the Blighted Property Review Committee. The appointment's effective through March 2024.
The resolution to confirm is sponsored by Ms. Cramsey Smith and Mr. Cologne.
Discussion? Ms. Negron?
Thank you, President Waldron. I want to say, and I should have commented before, about Anna Flex Smith. I know her personally. She's a great individual, and I'm so glad that she is still, even though she's now been a new mother, she still has time to take out and to be involved in these committees. And, you know, she's a perfect example of a great person to have in there. And for the Blighted Property Review, she is an ideal candidate, as she has worked for, well, she was with Bethlehem CADCB, working with issues of housing, and especially housing in the South Side. So she has done an incredible amount of research and work, and it's an ideal candidate for that position. However, I will also say that I talked with 2 other individuals that will be great for that position. You will be getting their resume, because in the future, hopefully, they will be involved in that too. They're great. Some business owners, some homeowners, raised and born in Bethlehem, and had no idea that committee existed, that commission existed. So, show interest. So I will be sending resumes, or they will be sending the resumes. And but I gladly support Anna for this reappointment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Graham. Clerk, please call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan? Mr.
Aye.
Okay. Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0.
Thank you. I hereby, Administrative Order 18, I hereby reappoint Anthony Silver, 1231 Shelbourne Drive, Bethlehem, to the Historic Conservation Commission. South Bethlehem and Mount Airy. The appointment is effective through April 2023.
The resolution to confirm is sponsored by Ms. Cramsey Smith and Mr. Colon.
Discussion? Mr. Grom?
Thank you, President Waldron. Again, Mr. Sepoy, it's this is owner in the South Side, and it's a great candidate and perfect for that position. But again, I've talked with many other residents. Mr. Javier Toro, that which you got the resume, he moved after leaving Wyandotte, the close to the Five Points area for 20 some years. He actually left the city. No longer lives in the city, but there are others that I've talked to, and they are also interested in being part of this position. So they were not ready to present their resume yet, but there will be, and hopefully in the future they will be appointed. I gladly support this reappointment.
Any other discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan? Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan? Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0.
Thank you. Administrative Order 19, I hereby reappoint Thomas Barker, 1007 Prospect Avenue, to City Planning Commission. Appointment is effective through May 2025.
The resolution to confirm is sponsored by Mr. Colon and Mr. Waldron.
Dr. Van Wert?
So, Mr. Barker was appointed to the Bethlehem Planning Commission in 2013. This would extend his tenure through... This is... over 12 years without freeing up this seat for anyone else to come in and give a different point of view. Perhaps a non-male or a non-white point of view might be a nice thing. There's so many more options, Lord, and I hope that council will take this seriously. There is an opportunity right now to walk the walk, and that means pushing the administration to find someone new, to bring in new opinions and new ideas into the seat. And I'm going to ask you to do this tonight. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion, Ms. Negron?
I was actually a member of the Planning Commission when Mr. Baker was a member of the Planning Commission. Yeah, that was a long time ago. And that's why, again, my insistence to have members of the community provide the resume and get involved, so we don't have the same individuals again and again for decades, you know? So that's why, you know, I was so excited that at least from the six people that I talked and they were excited about it, one presented the resume back in February. I am definitely not going to support the reappointment of Mr. Baker. It's time for new individuals to have an opportunity, to have the chance, and this is a chance right now. We don't have to.
Is there any other discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert?
Nay.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Nay.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 5-2.
Thank you, Mr. President. That's my report.
Thank you, Mr. Donchez. I'm not sure if I misheard, but was the chief, were you planning on making a comment this evening?
Only if he's a question.
Okay.
If you would like the chief to make a presentation or...
Well, I know there was a memo that came forth last week from Mr. Reynolds and Ms. Cramsey Smith, and we got your response yesterday. Has that been public yet? One of the callers had made a comment about that.
The information will be placed on the website tomorrow morning. The response to the council's memorandum and the use of force policy will be made public on the website tomorrow.
Understood. I wasn't sure if there was any additional comments, Chief, that you had in regard to your memo. Or, Mr. Reynolds or Ms. Cramsey Smith or any other members of council had any questions in response to that memo?
We've received a memo from Councilwoman Smith and Councilman Reynolds. We looked at all eight parts of it, and also the initiative to continue more community policing programs. Met with the mayor on it. Monday, I handed over to him our use of force policy. We reviewed it together. Nothing in it that I wouldn't want the public to read. It's transparent. We both agreed on it. And there's nothing wrong with what you're requesting. Most of the stuff we already do, we're an accredited department. We've been doing these things for years. If you want to look at our paperwork and our directives, you are welcome to come down there as city councilman anytime. My office is always open to you. You've heard that for 7 years from me. So there's nothing we are hiding down there. If you have a question on any directive or any activity or any tactics that we use, everything is documented. We have to document it. We're a dual accredited agency, and we take a lot of pride in that and in serving the citizens.
Well,
do we have issues, and can reform help us? I think it can help every police department in the country. Criminal justice reform can go around this country, and we need it. We have an outdated criminal justice system. Okay, is there racism in it? Yeah. There's also racism in every type of occupation, from police to doctors to politicians to teachers to whatever. It's there. It's embedded in our society. If we're going to do this, let's do it correctly. Let's put everything on the table. And let's look at it and do it right. I have no issue with you coming down here asking me any questions on the police department. I never have.
Thanks for your response, Chief, and I don't think anyone's going to ever have criticized you for not being transparent in your role here.
I don't have a problem if you do criticize me. If I deserve it, I deserve it.
And I'm not sure, you know, I'll let Mr. Reynolds and Ms. Cramsey Smith speak on the memo that they wrote. I don't think, at least their intention wasn't directives for the police department to adapt. I mean, there's been a lot nationally being made about A Can't Wait.
Mm-hmm.
I think the intention was just for you to let us know what is already being used and any reasons or any feedback you had on any additional things.
We did respond back with a small answer to each of them. We can expand upon that at the public safety meeting when you have the mayor, me, my deputy up there, or training captain up there. The eight things in A Can't Wait, honestly, I support all of them. I have no problem with them.
And are those directives that are on paper in the city? Okay.
Yes. Believe it or not, yes.
I believe it. I'll turn it over to Mr. Reynolds and Ms. Cramsey Smith and then other members of council for any comments. Mr. Reynolds?
I just wanted to first thank the chief and thank the administration for getting back to us on the use of force. And I also think it is notable that the sharing of that document is not something that has happened in the past. I know, and I may be wrong about this, but I believe other cities, and I heard the mayor refer to this before, have not shared this, and they have not shared it even after right to know requests. And so I think that it is worth a thank you to the chief and the administration for sharing that information. That memo grew out of conversations I had with Councilman Cramsey Smith and others about where do we go from here. And I'm happy to hear that the mayor talked about his advisory council, but I do think that this is a time for a much bigger conversation. And I've spoken about Mr. Colon about the idea of a public safety committee meeting, but one of the things that I think that we need to do, and the idea of the community engagement initiative, is that we need to expand these conversations to not just whether or not, and I agree with Mr. Waldron that, you know, if I ever call Mr. DeLuzio and ask a question, he has always been 100% transparent, and I appreciate that. But what we're hearing publicly and what we've heard from different people is that they want a public space for this conversation. that it's not just about getting a meeting with a mayor or a meeting with a police chief, but a consistent public space and venue for discussion and action items on systemic racism, discrimination, and social injustice. You know, different priorities for an engagement initiative, and I see a way for us to kind of bring together our thoughts with what the mayor's proposed here, but we need to have ongoing conversation about different awareness, discussion, systemic racism in our community, and involve law enforcement. We also need to have public conversation about the priorities for the allocation of resources within the police department. This is not the first time that, you know, we've gone down this road. A couple of years ago, when I released Bethlehem 2017, I proposed the idea of not filling one vacancy in 1 year and taking those $75,000, $80,000, whatever the cost was of an officer, and putting it towards community engagement, putting it towards trust building, putting it towards efforts that the community wants. And we hear a lot about systemic racism, and we talk about this different stuff, but we don't really have the solutions. And I don't think that it is something where I can bring something forward and say, we should do this, or we should do this. I think it's been made very clear in the past couple of weeks that we need to listen, and we need to create space for the different groups in our community to have that opportunity. I also think there should be a public conversation within this initiative about organizing these non-enforcement events in neighborhoods and communities. We've heard a lot about how there are good things that we do, but at the same time, I'm not sure, and this comes partly from public comments made from, you know, the chief and others, that everybody necessarily in the police department buys into the value of these non-enforcement engagement trust-building activities. And I think that public conversations about the intersection of race, homelessness, mental health, poverty, law enforcement, that we need to have those conversations publicly and then talk about how we use our resources and how we allocate our resources within the police department. Other police departments throughout the country are realizing that not only could you, but you should have employees in your police department that are not traditional police officers, that makes those officers jobs easier. A lot of us are teachers. We understand that sometimes you don't need to add more teachers to a school. You need to add mental health professionals. You need to add guidance counselors. You need to add other people. And we really, really need to take a look at how we are organizing law enforcement. And also, we need to find ways to necessarily expand the amount of people that have a voice. And I certainly appreciate, and I've always felt that I could call the mayor. I've always felt that I could call, you know, Chief DeLuzio. But I think it's more powerful if we have regular, monthly get-togethers, meetings, citizens, human service organizations, school leaders, social justice organizations, police officers, and not just the leadership but the rank and file, and any organization that wants to be involved that has an opportunity to be like, this is what's going on in my neighborhood. This is our experience with the police department. This is what we need. This is what we would like to see as far as interaction with law enforcement and the city of Bethlehem and all these other organizations. The power we have in city council is to help set the structure and space by which these groups have a voice. And that's what the Community Engagement Initiative is about. My plan was that when there is the public safety committee meeting, is to draft up a resolution that kind of outlines all of these different points and ideas about what we're looking to create. I've had a lot of different people already contact me and say this is a great idea to have these public conversations. And I'm also happy to hear that the mayor is planning something similar. So I think there's really an opportunity for us to bring these two ideas together. But at the same time, I think that everybody in city council needs to take a look at the idea that we're the ones that set the budget. We're the ones that allocate the resources within the city budget on a year-to-year basis. And there's a lot of room here, and the people of this city want us to have a conversation about how we are spending this money in public safety. Not necessarily reducing the money, but whether or not it doesn't make sense to allocate resources in other ways. And how exactly that looks, I don't know at this time, but I think as we watch other cities, I'm hoping to continue those conversations with the police chief. I'm hoping to continue those conversations with our police department, is if there's not ways for us to invest in public safety in this city in ways that we might not have before, but that the community and the citizens want at this important point in our history. Thank you.
I understand what you're saying, Mr. Reynolds, and I agree with it. You made a comment, where do we go from here? We move forward. We don't go backwards. A lot of your things in the letter you sent me, like I said, I agree with you. If I was on council, I would second that resolution you're talking about. I think community policing is very important. I think that's the community policing is what we should be getting back into this country. Okay, we got away from it over the years.
It's not just the idea of community policing, though. It's also teaching our police officers about the intersection of all of these different issues, whether or not it's poverty or mental health, and bringing that conversation together into a conversation where we get a better picture of what people are going through. And Chief, I know we've had that conversation a lot, and I know you've always publicly been willing to have those conversations. But, you know, I think that part of the challenge is going to be, and I'm just going off things that you've said, is getting the complete buy-in from everybody within our police department. But I appreciate your interest in having that conversation.
Police, social services, everybody needs to be involved in this for those problems you indicate. 100% agree with you.
Ms. Gramsci-Smith?
Chief, I just want to say thank you for your response to the questions and giving us all the data. You raised a couple points. First, you talked about racism and that being everywhere, and certainly that is unfortunately true. I think that, you know, I've said many times in the past, I support our police. I think I have an interesting perspective because I lived with the police chief for 21 years. And I've seen how policing has evolved over those years. In many ways, not good. In some ways, good. But I can say I remember my dad, and he was a true community police officer. He was the kind of guy that somebody, you know, got in trouble or got out of jail, he would go get them a job. He would not, you know, try to harass them or re-arrest them. And those days are gone in many ways, but I think that, you know, we really need to get back to some level of community policing. But I guess I just want to say that while I certainly hear you about racism being everywhere, I think that the people certainly have spoken and the people of Bethlehem have spoken. Within 1 week's time, we had 3 rallies and marches, and at 2 of them, we had 1,500 to 2,000 people present. That says a lot. The people have spoken, and they want change, they're demanding change, and we need change. And while there are many things within our police department that don't need to be changed, as you even said in the memo, and Officer Adello said that, you know, their perfection doesn't exist and there's always room for improvement, so I hope that we can all work together for that. And again, I want to also thank you for being willing to move forward with the Community Engagement Initiative and to review the use of enforcements. It seems like we already implementing the A Can't Wait initiative, so that's a real plus. I just had a few questions, clarification regarding the use of force. Is it okay if I ask that now?
If you want to, or the public safety, or you can call me, however you want to do it. You're the counselor.
Well, I guess I'll ask now so that maybe, you know, you could be food for thought to something you could think about. Number one is the ban on chokeholds. I really want to be clear. Is there truly a ban on chokeholds in this city? I mean, it says that it's not to be used unless it's a matter of life and death, I believe.
We do not teach it. We do not endorse it. Nor do we utilize it anywhere in the city. It's in our use of force directive. The only case would be if the officer is fighting for his life and that is a final last alternative, meaning he's going to die if he doesn't use a chokehold. That would be it. And I don't think anybody would criticize him to save his own life against an assailant at that point. But that's it. And that type of call would be made by the district attorney or the attorney general's office, who would investigate that assault on the officer or the use of that chokehold. That's an extreme case. To ban it completely, okay, to use the word ban takes in completely, you might have that 1 in 1 million cases where it's used. Meaning the officer's on his way out, basically, and the only thing he could do to save his life is use a chokehold. You can't deprive that man of that, or woman of that. That's the only case. And honestly, in 40 years, I've never seen one used. And this June will be 40 years from me in police work.
And I certainly understand if it's a matter of saving the officer's life, I understand. But can you speak to that? It seems like many cities throughout the country are banning chokeholds, so how are they handling that?
A lot of them in LA, they're using the same vocabulary, only as a final last resort if you actually look at their use of force. I believe it was LA that was using it, and a lot of the other cities are.
So are there
they're
cities
using the word ban, but it's not included.
Mistake, but aren't there not cities that are saying they're banning chokeholds totally? That they're just banning them?
They're banning them, but only in a rare life existence type of situation.
So are you saying that they're stating in their policy that they're banning them except it can be used if it's a matter of life or death?
Yeah, if somebody is assaulting you and the only thing you can do to survive is to put a chokehold on that person or somehow reach up and try to choke him, otherwise you are going to die. You have to give somebody that option. I wouldn't take that away from a citizen. That is the only option. That option. So the word ban is banned. It's not utilized.
Maybe.
It's not endorsed by us. We just don't use it. But there could be that very, very rare occasion.
And I guess that's it's a vague gray area because it seems like that's the real buzzword right now, banning chokeholds. And I've heard it being passed throughout police departments. So maybe that's something that I certainly understand your stance, but something maybe that, you know, we could look into what language the other police departments are using regarding chokeholds.
I would say look at some of their use of force policies and look at the language. Look at their policy in that city, okay? And then look at their language. Don't look at the eight and wait language. Look at the language in that city or cities you're looking at. I wouldn't take that away from a citizen to save his own life, and I couldn't take it away from an officer. But you have to put restrictions on it, and the restrictions are the main part of that.
The other question, and this is relevant to the George Floyd death. I mean, the one thing was the duty to intervene and the controversy regarding the other police officers not intervening. And I think it's a plus that you said you added language to compel officers to intervene. If force is being used beyond that, which is reasonable. But I'm just thinking, compelling means to encourage or convince. Can we not consider more stronger wording like require or mandate to intervene? Because I know police officers have stated that, you know, it is a network and that they have been very hesitant to intervene because they will go back to the department, the precinct, and then they will be hassled. And I'm thinking that if we use stronger words, that might give those officers that feel the need to intervene a stronger sense of support within their ranks.
We use the word shall in our directive, and shall makes it mandatory, if I'm correct, Mr. Spurk, because that language came from the legal department. We don't say compel, because there's exceptions to that. We use the word shall, which makes it mandatory. So there's no objection by the officer. If he sees an unlawful use of force, he shall intervene. He has to.
Okay, and that's what I read is that officers are taught to intervene, and directives also compel officers to report witness violations.
We use the legal word shall.
So maybe that's something to look at.
Yeah, you can check with Mr. Spurk on that. And the definition of the word shall when used in a legal document or a policy or a contract, if I'm correct.
I'm referencing, it says language has been added to add directives compelling intervention, so that's what I'm referencing.
Yes.
So, part of semantics, but I feel like we need strong wording because I know officers have spoken that they feel, you know, that if they intervene against another officer, they're going to really get it when they get back to the precinct.
Depends on their training. It depends on the department they work in. But we use the word shall in our directives when we make something mandatory. Then there's no, that the officer knows exactly what he has to do.
I know I brought this up in the past, and it's something I think hopefully we can look at. I'd like to look at it down the line. The training. I know I looked at a graph, and it was nationally, police recruits get majority of training on firearms and defensive tactics, and a very, very small percentage of training on de-escalation, crisis intervention, communication skills. And as we said, it's unfortunate that police officers, they have to, you know everything. They have to be the social worker, the therapist, the domestic relations mediator, drug and alcohol therapist. So I think it's important if we can look at what percentage of training are we giving in certain areas, and maybe we need to heighten the training in those areas, like de-escalation communication skills. I'd like to really, maybe we could look at something like that through our community initiative. And I know there's bills proposed at the state level regarding training, and I know our Congressman Susan Wild is proposing a bill for funds toward crisis intervention teams to help with the police in the community. So hopefully we'll have some guidance and some funding and resources at the state and federal level regarding this issue.
Can I answer your training question? The chart you're looking at is probably police academy training. Okay, in the police academy, they do a lot of physical fitness and firearms. They should be teaching more de-escalation. After you graduate from the police academy and you come here to Bethlehem, I can only speak of our training. We retrain them in firearms. We retrain them in first aid because they do it our way, which is higher than standard in the academy. That's because of our accreditation process. We train de-escalation twice a year in spring use of force training and in fall use of force training. Okay, it's a continued training every year with the police, with a Bethlehem police officer. The training in the police academy is controlled by MOPEC, Municipal Police Officers Training Education Commission out of Harrisburg. Okay, that is something where you as politicians can look at MOPEC and change that training. I don't know how you do it, but that's a Harrisburg question. I would like to see more mental health training in there. I would like to see more training on de-escalation. I'd like to see a bunch of different training that I don't think they put enough hours into. But that's something the state makes the syllabus, and if we can change it, let's change it. That's part of criminal justice reform. And you'll get that from a bunch of chiefs if you actually talk to them.
Well, I guess, and I know it was for the recruits and the training, but I'm more focused on what our police department gets as far as training. And maybe we can look at that, and the percentage of training. Are we getting enough? And again, we may be getting enough now, but I know working in the mental health field, I mean, mental health instances of individuals with mental health issues is on the rise increasingly, and especially since COVID-19. And I think it's really important that our officers have as much training, and especially on de-escalation. I mean, I know there was an article about an incident with someone who suffers from mental illness last night, and it appeared that the officers handled that very well, and it could have been a deadly situation like happened in Atlanta recently, but it was not. So that was a plus. But I just want to make sure that our officers have enough quality training at their disposal on a frequent enough basis.
We're doing training, and if we can do more, we could, and we will. My professional standards unit is preparing a training report, since that was one of your questions on how many hours of training and what goes into training. You'll get that usually within the next 2 weeks, and that will give you every officer and what we train on, what we specialize in. That may answer some of your questions there for the different topics. But I agree with that. Yeah. Training across the country has to be improved. It's no standard.
Well, great. That's all the questions I had. And again, I want to thank you, and I think it's a real plus that you are and the department's willing to participate in the community engagement initiative. And again, I think I can speak from a different perspective in that, I have a lot of law enforcement people in my family, but I also, for almost 40 years, have worked with and advocated for people of color, and systemic racism does really exist, and I've seen it with the people I work with, and I've seen it with many of my friends, so I can see both sides of the issue here, and I think that that's why it's really important that we have a community engagement where we get everyone at the table, all the stakeholders, so we can put everything out there and work to building greater trust within the police and the city and the community, and most importantly, giving the community a voice, because that is the right and necessary thing to do. So, again, thank you for always being available, Chief, and for responding to our memo.
Thank you.
Any other, Mr. Klum?
Thank you, President Waldron. I don't have any questions for the Chief. But it was alluded to the Public Safety Committee meeting, which in all likelihood is going to take place prior to our next council meeting, because we have an extra, our next council meeting is not for 3 weeks, but I would like to have that Public Safety Committee meeting sooner rather than later. So I appreciate everybody, Robert's reached out to us as we try to coordinate that with the high school over at Liberty, and I'll make sure to put the administration to get it posted on the city website, reach out to all the community members who have already been in contact with us, and do our best for the clerk's office and the city to make sure that we're properly notifying everyone when we have a confirmed date and time for that meeting so that everyone interested in attending can come out to it. Thank you.
Okay. Dr. Van Hart?
Thank you, Chief. I'm going to stay on theme tonight, so I'm really learning an awful lot that I think I had some rose-colored glasses on about lots of different dynamics, and I'm learning a lot, mostly through media, but also through you, about how police departments function, how training works, how community engagement works. And one of the things that I would like to talk about at the public safety meeting, which I'm really looking forward to, is also our civil service board, which is appointed by the mayor. And how does the civil service board engage? And I don't need the answers right now, but it's something we could discuss, is how is the civil service board involved with complaints against officers, and how are those complaints against officers vetted? Who's on the board, and how do we make sure that that board as well is a reflection of the community that the police serve? So I just wanted to put that out there as a potential topic, and I always thank you for coming and talking to us.
Okay. If you have any other questions, you can contact me anytime, or we'll bring them up at the Public Safety Committee run by Mr. Colon.
Any other comments? Mr. Callahan, did you want to make a comment? Your video is lagging, so I'm not optimistic about your audio. He's on his phone right now. Switch. Mr. Callahan, we're not able to hear you. Your connection's poor, Mr. Callahan. We're not able to hear you. I know you switched over to your phone in an effort away from your laptop. If you'd like, you can call in as well, too. And that way we can have an audio-only format. In the meantime, I don't know, Mr. Collins, do you want to try again?
Is that better?
That is better.
Okay. So, I mean, Chief, I want to thank you for all you've done. As everybody stated tonight, I don't want to repeat what everybody's been stating as far as community policing and racism. Racism is all over the place. It's in every fact of society. I would agree that a large majority of our police officers are great people, well-intended people, but it's the small percentage of the ones that are out of line, that shed a bad light on the rest of police officers. I think one of the things that Bethlehem can be really proud of is our police force. We've after the Herco situation, we went through a national accreditation process, which I thought was a great thing for the city. And part of that was that our police department went through extensive training, and I think also in the years past, with the introduction of dash cams with body cameras on the police officers, I think it's not only a great thing for the police department and the police officers to protect them, but also to protect the residents of our city. And, you know, I think what's happened in our country right now is going to be seen in years from now, and very similar to what a lot of teachers went through probably in the late mid to late 80s. You know, if you grew up with in my generation, the late 60s and 70s, I'll throw Mr. Spurk in there and Mr. Donchess. You know, public teachers, if you were screwing around, you were throwing snowballs, you know, a teacher gave you a rap. You know, maybe, you know, slapped your hands or grabbed you or something. And times have changed where now you cannot even, you can't touch a student for any reason other than to protect yourself. If they physically touch you. And I think that's probably what we need to be doing. I don't know, you know, I think over to maybe the last 15, 20 years, because some of our crimes got a lot more abusive, and a lot of criminals were using higher gauge weapons and things like that. I think our police force became more weaponized, and at some point, even after the Gulf War, the United States government was giving police forces a lot of equipment, whether it was the, you know, Humvee type vehicles or whatever. But you know, I think what's happened now is going to, and I think we need to put some place in our guidelines that, you know, if a police officer has never physically touched them, or a police officer is ever in danger, they have the right to defend themselves. But that, you know, what happened in Atlanta last week, I don't think there's anybody questioning that the individual was intoxicated and that he shouldn't have resisted arrest. But when he was running away and fleeing, I don't think at that point, with the officers having his ID, knowing who he was,
Mr. Callahan, we're still having trouble hearing you with your connection.
And knowing his car and his registration, he couldn't have let him run away and go pick him up, whether it was the next morning or whatever, and arrest him for, because he had already taken the blood alcohol test.
We lost his microphone.
Mr. Callahan,
needs to happen is that as police departments in the United States need to only engage in physical activity if
Mr. Callahan, the connection's too poor. We're not able to make out what you're saying. I did send you a text message with a link for an audio only. So if you're able to call that phone number on your phone, we'll be able to connect with audio only, unless you're able to go somewhere else to have a more consistent connection. But at this point, we're not going to be able to continue taking your comments, because it's the connection's too poor. Yeah, you could also call our landline too, and I can put you on the phone. But I think that the video is chewing up too much bandwidth, that the audio is buffering out. Based on, that's what our IT professional told me. Chief, do you have any other comments?
No, I was just waiting for the call or what you're going to do here.
I don't know what we're going to do.
If you have any questions or anything, send me a memo, send the mayor a memo, yeah, and I'll gladly get back to you with the information you request.
Obviously, for members of council as well as members of the public, there has been an allusion to a public safety committee meeting that we're going to have in a format, and hopefully we'll be in the green phase by then, and at that point we'll be able to allow public back in, and we're going to try to do that in a space that's larger than this room, so we'll be able to have adequate social distancing so that we can have people in the room who are able to give their comments in person and start what is the beginning of a dialogue between members of the community, administration, and the police department.
We look forward to it, and the police department will be there.
Great, and I thank you for your response to this, and I'm sure many folks will be looking forward to the posting of the information that you talked about, Mr.
Mr. Walls.
I can hear you, Mr. Callen, but we can't make out what you're saying. Again, the connection is too poor at this point. We're not going to be able to hear any more comments. And I think for the rest of the meeting, it might make sense for you to call in to our landline, and we can bypass the GoToMeeting connection. I believe that is the end of your report, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
We'll be moving on with the rest of our agenda this evening to ordinances for final passage. Ordinance 8A.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the 2020 General Fund Budget. Bill 13, 2020 is sponsored by Ms. Negron and Mr. Waldron.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert.
Aye.
Mr. Callahan.
Aye.
Mr. Cologne.
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci-Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. New ordinance, ordinance 9A.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, amending Article 121 of the City of Bethlehem Codified Ordinances related to finance. Bill 14, 2020 is sponsored by Ms. Gramsci-Smith and Mr. Cologne.
Discussion. Mr. Evans, we kept you here long enough. If you want to give us the 60-second rundown on that one.
Yeah, I was making the comment. This did move its way through a finance committee at the, I guess it was Wednesday, the June 3rd meeting. And I'll take any questions if any members of council that did not attend or were able to watch that video, if they have any questions about the reasons that we proposed this amendment. Or if they would like me to explain and give examples, I'd be happy to do that as well.
Mr. Callahan?
Let's try again.
Got that?
Yeah, can you mute your go-to meeting?
I did. I think Zoom might be a better platform for me. I think Zoom might be a better platform.
Judy, can you mute yourself, please?
But
Give us a second. We're having a feedback loop here. We're okay.
Good. Better.
Yes. We're on ordinance 9A, bill number 14.
With all the Zoom meetings I've had with the school district, I've had any issues. I don't know if it's a format issue with. I don't know what it is with the go-to, but anyway, Mr. Evans, I'm just curious though, and I'm generally in favor of this, but so this is just to the city will still have to come back to council to spend bond money, right?
Yes. Okay. I use an example in the finance committee. The reason for this step in this process, this is the step in the process is well down the line, and there's a couple reasons that we've talked about proposing for some time. So I think it was best maybe if I explain it as an example that happens in a given year. The one I used in the finance committee, I'll use again, was a fire truck. And the city's looking to replace a fire truck. They believe it to be $1 million. The first thing we do is ask Chief Hockey to get some estimates, some early quotes. And once we are comfortable with that number, that's what we come to council with in the fall of 2019. And in that budget, council needs to vote, and you've done that many times now as a councilman. $1 million for a fire truck, another public works projects, work purchases, public safety purchases, and on and on. Once it's voted on, it becomes part of the budget, becomes official in January. From that time,
like on Fridays when we get notifications,
yes,
like bond,
yeah,
we have already passed those bonds and voted on the bonds, and so very rarely does anybody. I mean, I don't ever remember anybody having any questions about paying the bond fees, the monthly or quarterly fees, whatever it is for the bond, pay off the bond. But my question is, I guess, more so on. When we float the municipal bonds every 2 years, what is that, for $5 million?
That's always our goal. It's always about that. We've kept at that standard for some time. It's getting more difficult to do, but that's what we do. Shoot for the $5 million.
So this wouldn't be if someone wanted to, if a department head wanted to spend money on something or some of the money on that $5 million bond. You would still have to come back. This isn't wiping out city council's knowledge of any spending of that $5 million bond. That's my concern. As far as like we float a bond for $20 million or refinance a bond and we have to make the payments, we've already voted on that. But I'm talking about like on any other spending. This isn't negating council in being notified about the spending on those types of bonds where there's floating money there, right?
No, yeah, what you're seeing is, again, once it's approved, Chief Hockey goes out, gets a requisition. The requisition has to go to the controller, an independent, elected, separate branch of government. In this case, it's Mr. Yasso, who's I think had an opportunity to reach out to a number of members. He supports this proposal as well. He looks at that requisition before it's even turned into a purchase order. He and his office, when Chief Hockey wants to buy it, looks and says, is there $1 million from council? Did they allow it? Did they approve it? And is it for a fire truck? Does that match up? Once it is,
right,
then turns a purchase order. Then the purchase order is given to the fire company. The fire company builds the fire truck. It takes 6 to 8 months. About 6 to 8 months down the road, when the truck is ready, they deliver an invoice and arrange delivery. That invoice is what you see. So by the time you see it, we're way down the road. The truck's been built. So there are several implications. One is, what if it comes to council and that's voted no? If there are legal issues, that the fire company's gonna say, wait a minute, I have a purchase order that you said build this thing, or a fence that was installed, or a building that was built by a contractor, and it's time to get paid. And that's where council is seeing it under this part of the ordinance. That's why we like to remove this section only. It doesn't make sense to be there at that point. It doesn't really serve a purpose that was intended to do. The person that put this in was Councilman Dave DiGiacinto. I was on council at the time, Councilman Reynolds was, and Mayor Donches. And it was put in 2011. Sometime after that, he was elected to be the controller. He chose not to run for re-election for council, but as controller, and instituted a really good process that now rests, again, with another elected official of the city to take on this this part of the oversight of the purchasing of the city of Bethlehem. And that's what he does, and that's why, again, I think he talked to some members of council to explain his role and how he does it, not once, but twice. Because once an invoice comes to us before we cut the, or once the check is cut, the check and the invoice go to the controller a second time where they look at it, their office, to make sure it lines up before the check can be mailed out to the vendor to complete the purchase. So it shows up twice. It shows up late. I think this also does take, this step does take, so you know and are aware, a significant amount of time of three employees every Friday. When, you know, our accounts payable looks at all the invoices that were collected or to be paid by a bond payment. Those are all assembled and moved up to Mark Civac, who scans them all and develops an email, sends it to the city clerk's office. City clerk's office flips it, gets their email, prepares it, sends it all to you. And so there's quite a bit of time every week for a number of weeks, for a number of years, that's there. That's why we thought it was important to remove this general part. I'll also say that there are many parts in 121 that provide oversight that we support and that we follow and we are keeping in place.
Okay. I just don't want, I mean, for obvious payments on bonds that we've passed already, I have no problem with that because it speeds up the process. I just don't want money being spent out of that, you know, especially on those $5 million bonds that we float every 2 years. I don't want, you know, if we agree that we're going to spend money on this, and all of a sudden we don't, and then spend on something else. I would hope that the administration would come back to the council for approval.
Yeah, and with the control, it's impossible to do that. George Yasso is not going to allow that check to even go through his office. If that doesn't match up, that invoice doesn't match up to something that was authorized by council in the budget, he won't sign it, and it doesn't go anywhere. So that,
all right, thank
that
you.
Step is there.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions on Bill 14, 9A? Clerk, please call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolutions. Resolution 10A.
Be it resolved that the Council of the City of Bethlehem, Northampton County, Pennsylvania, in accordance with the Municipal Records Manual, hereby authorizes the disposition of the public records held by the Department of the Administration Purchasing Bureau as listed in the exhibit. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Ms. Cramsey-Smith.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10B.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Orlando Diefendurfer Electrical Contractors, Inc. for electrical construction related to the Mountaintop Pump Station Renovation Project. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Ms. Cramsey-Smith.
Discussion? Please call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10D?
10C.
Pardon me. Resolution 10C. Thank you.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Zimmerman Environmental for general construction work related to the Mountaintop Pump Station Renovation Project. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Ms. Cramsey-Smith.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. New business?
10D.
Oh, I'm getting ahead of myself. Sorry, guys. Resolution 10D.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller under such city other city officials deemed appropriate are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with the Greater Lehigh Valley Chamber of Commerce for Marketing Services. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Cramsey Smith and Mr. Colon.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. New business, Mr. Reynolds?
There will be a Finance Committee meeting on Tuesday, July 7th at 6 p.m. in Town Hall. The agenda item, proposed refinance of Water Authority PennBest note. Thank you.
Any other new business from members of council? Mr. Callahan?
Thank you, and hopefully you can hear me better now. So anyways, I wanted to thank the mayor and his administration for the parklets and all, you know, the great job they did on Main Street. I talked to the mayor the other day about possibly also keeping those year-round. I think it'd be a great idea. It's not slowing down any traffic, and I think it'd be a great idea to have on a yearly basis in the summertime. It's just, you know, one extra thing I think, that makes Bethlehem such a beautiful place to visit. And, I commend the Public Works Department for the planters. They look awesome with the flowers in it. And again, I want to thank everybody that was committed to that. I do want to say that I was trying to, I don't know how much you heard or missed with my comments to Chief DeLucio. Like everybody else said, that, you know, there's racism all over the world in every different part of society, and there's also a large majority of our police are great cops, and I think Bethlehem has a great police force, and I think a lot of that I think we benefited from the Hercule case. It was a big mess up on the part of the city police department, and I think and after that trial, the city went through the national accreditation process, and as the chief said, it's an ongoing thing. I think the police department is better off because of this, going through that process. I think if you look at in the last 3 or 4 years, there's also been additional things, whether it's the dash cameras on the police cars, the body cameras on the policemen. I think all of this stuff that's going on are good changes. It's not only good for the police officers and protecting them, but I think it's a great thing also for the citizens in protecting them against those one or two policemen that are stepping over the line. And so in this day and age, with all the cameras around and stuff like that, I think what's also happening with this, national movement, I don't want to date myself. I'll date Mr. Spurk and Mr. Donchez on this. But, when we were growing up in the 70s and 80s, it wasn't uncommon if you screwed around for a teacher to grab you. And sometimes, give you a little slap if you're throwing snowballs or something. And somewhere in the mid-80s or in late 80s, things changed. And, I think Mr. Reynolds and myself and Ms. Cramsey Smith will readily testify, at no time is a teacher ever allowed to touch a student unless the student touches the teacher. And I think that's probably where we're moving to in the police departments. And I think it's probably going to be a good thing that, under no circumstance should a police officer use physical aggression on any type of an individual or resident unless it's equal to and proportionate to what the individual is doing. I don't think anybody questions that the individual was over limit on another breathalyzer. I don't think anybody, disputes the fact that he resisted arrest. But I think the thing in Atlanta that is very evident is that the police already had his license. They knew where he lived. They already had his car and vehicle. And I think at that point, because he resisted arrest, probably the best thing, was to probably let him just run off because he was intoxicated. And you know what? Go over there the next day and pick him up and then arrest him for resisting arrest. But using deadly force on that individual when he's running away, he's intoxicated, I think what we need to do in the country is have our police force never using anything more than what is absolutely necessary. And I think it's evident in a lot of the things that have happened in the last month that those individual cases were, cases where the police department or individual police officers used unnecessary force against an individual when it really wasn't needed. And I think in the long run, I think the police department and the communities and the residents and taxpayers of all of our cities are going to be better off for the changes that are coming. So that's all I wanted to say earlier, and I didn't, I apologize again for the audio breaking up. So thank you.
Any other comments, new business for members of council? Ms. Negro?
Thank you, President Waldron. Well, first of all, I like to, I'm glad that Councilman Callahan mentioned it about the park lids. What a beautiful sight it was to just drive around and see everybody out safely eating. I wouldn't dare sit out there myself yet. I'll order and pick up in the curb. But I'm glad that business are increasing and that people are daring to be out and about. I already sent an email to Alicia saying bravo. Thank you. Because I think it's not just the parklet itself, and I thank the public work for building them. But I really believe or see that the department that with Alicia Curtis' direction, thinking completely out of the box to do something to better, listening to the downtown business, to the businesses themselves, to the business owners, and talking about how can we make this work. And, under other circumstances, restaurants that wanted to have tables out and use parking space had to, pay for the parking not used and make permits and get insurance and who knows all the stuff that loops that they have to go through in order to have some tables outside or, closing parking spots. And, she made that happen without all those loops. It's just amazing. I really appreciate the thinking out of the box and working together with the business association, with the downtown business, with the chamber, with all the businesses. And I know it was a lot of effort and work, but I was really wow and bravo, well done. I also have a question. Mayor, is there a process, and Councilman Callahan mentioned this too, all the great things that we have accomplished with the police department and the cameras are very helpful and very good to have, not just the body cameras, but the vehicle cameras. But I wonder how is that, he mentioned that it was to protect not only the officers, but the citizens. And that made me think then, how is that really helping the citizens? Is there a process in which, Mayor, in which citizens can request the footage of the body camera or the vehicle camera when they have been stopped?
I don't think I'm qualified to answer that, but I'll have Solicitor Lisa and the Chief give you a response tomorrow.
Okay, very good. Because I think that, I keep on hearing people saying, good, the police department has camera, body cameras, vehicle cameras, And that will protect everybody, right? We will get to see both sides of the stories. It will protect everybody's point, and I agree. But how is that protecting the people if people don't know? Because I myself would like to see the footage of a few individuals that have just said to me that they be stopped and what happened, what transpired when they were stopped. So you know, if what I've been told is a lie, I'd be the first one to say, you know what? When I saw the footage and I apologize because he was lying to me. But I have heard too many stories saying otherwise. And I think that it will be important that we have some kind of mechanism, whether it's the right to know request, or something, so that that footage can really be used to be a benefit for both the police officer, so he's accountable and he, you know, is shown that he didn't do. You know, right now all this happening and what we've seen, I've seen through videos, right? We've seen the videos of killing of people, police officers killing people. It's not that this is the first time it happens, but it's the first time that we see it with our own eyes. So what, you know, I really think we need to take a look at those camera footage, you know, and just like we request a police report for a car accident, to be able to request the footage of both the vehicle and the body camera from a police officer when, you know, and I personally, as a council person, when I hear stories, and I heard stories, and one of my officers would say, you liar, that's not true. You know, I would like to then say, hey, mayor, can I get the footage for this day at this time? Because someone told me that they, this, I'd like to see if that's true, you know? I think it will hold everybody accountable. People will come lying to me, making up stories, of being cars being searched without asking permission and that kind of stuff. And also keep our officers accountable, because whatever they do when they go out there and stop someone will be recorded and people will be able to watch it. So I will definitely love to have this conversation continue, because I want to know. I think that it's important that we have access to it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Grown. Any other new business from members of council? This meeting is adjourned.